and welcome to episode 3 of Dome and Bedlam, the official Lookout Landing podcast. I am Nathan Bishop, the managing editor of the website that I just named, and joining me today are my two colleagues. First of all, David Skiba. David, how are you tonight?
I am doing absolutely fantastic. I've been on Tidal, the streaming service of Jay-Z's ilk, listening to the entire discography of The Weeknd and enjoying every moment.
You have mentioned that website to me at least 3 times, and I still have no idea what you're talking about because I am an old man and I want to listen to sad bastard music all day, every day.
Well, they have that as
Brahms.
Well.
Brahms is a romantic from the romantic period. And that brings in my second co-host, which is former editor of the site and now just guy that hangs out on the podcast, Scott Weber. Scott, how are you tonight?
I'm great. That's a pretty apt description of what I do now.
I think so, too.
He's a literal man.
I just hang out. What's up?
He's just, yeah. So we're back here to talk again about the Mariners, who are matriculating their way through the Cactus League schedule. We're getting just far enough along into it where it's starting to feel boring as hell, and we're all ready to just fold the tent on Phoenix and start playing normal games. Mm-hmm. But we can't. We can't for a couple reasons. First of all, we don't control time. Secondly, because we haven't even introduced what we're drinking today. So let's start with Scott. Scott, you're traveling. You're remote this week. So you're in Northern California, which grants you special access to special libations. Am I correct?
That's true. I am in Palo Alto. I am at a Sheraton. It is adequate.
And 3 out of 5 Sheraton or 4 out of 5?
It's like I'll give it 3.5.
Okay.
Way to straddle fence.
I'm right across the street from Stanford, and I am drinking Pliny the Elder because I'm here and it's available and it's delicious.
That is a good, it's a really good beer. It's a beer that I think you can say is amazingly good and overhyped at the same time.
Yes.
Oh, totally great.
Yeah.
Totally great. Like, tonight when I had it, it was the first time I had it in maybe 3 or 4 years, just because, you know, it doesn't get distro up in Seattle anymore, so it's hard to come by. And it was served to me. I got it at the restaurant too, and it was served in a glass that was ice cold. And I actually don't like IPAs like that. I don't think IPA should go in a glass it's like a frosted glass because it's been sitting in the fridge. And once it kind of settled and it cooled down, it got much, much better in the second half. And then by the second one, it was really, really nice. In the second half of the second one, I was like, all right, I can see all the hype that money can buy.
Yep. And fun story once, because my wife and I aren't super into Valentine's Day as a special celebration. Back when Russian River used to distribute in Washington State, I went over to, I think it was Circa in West Seattle, and they were serving Pliny the Younger only for Valentine's Day, and I was able to hit up that beer that night, and it was just basically Pliny the Elder on steroids, which was just really, really amazing. So yeah, that's a great, great beer. David, what are you drinking tonight? Are you back at a local brewery?
You know, I have avoided the local brewery tonight by some miracle. I've at this point put away a couple of different bottles, which we can touch on later or not. But at this point,
drink responsibly, David.
I'm absolutely responsible for what I've done. But New Belgium has a Lips of Faith series, which I highly recommend. And I found their Blackberry Barley Wine Ale.
Ooh.
Is absolutely fantastic, to be honest. 10% alcohol as you're going to get with a barley wine, but just like super smooth, like a little bit sweet, not too bad. And then to back it up, I have a beer I've definitely never tried before, but sounded intriguing by Southern Tier, and it's their Cream Brulee Imperial Stout.
Oh, that's an intense beer.
Is it?
I think so.
I'm excited. We'll see.
I like Southern Tier a lot. Pumpkin is my favorite pumpkin, like kind of in that style. I think it's really, really awesome.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm definitely I'm definitely pumped up to get to it.
All right. in the hole.
Nice. As for myself, I am suffering from a bit of a cold, and so I don't want to drink beer. So what I'm drinking tonight is the we're big fans of Bend in my house, the beer, the outdoors, the town. But we're going with Crater Lake from rye whiskey from Bend Distillery in order to hopefully clear the sinus passages tonight. Scott, how are you sounding? Are you hearing us okay?
Yeah, everything sounds great.
Okay, cool. Your connection sounds a little bit fuzzy on our end, but we'll try to work through that.
Ooh, I apologize. It's the work laptop. Blame a local tech company.
It's a classic 3 out of 5 Sheraton.
It is. We're going to downgrade that to a 3-star. So if you're listening and Scott sounds a little fuzzy, we apologize for that. We're kind of working on a high wire here tonight with Scott being remote. But let's start talking about the Mariners, you guys. I think one of the big things that we started in on tonight and we kind of talked about starting on was the this news that we got on the bullpen this week. We've already talked about the bullpen kind of being one of the big key parts of this roster and kind of one of the big unknowns. It could go either way. And now I think it was yesterday or Monday that we heard that Evan Scribner and Cook are both out with injuries and going to be starting the season on the DL. It sounds like Scribner will be down not as long as Cook. But this really thins out what, you know, this is why you build a bullpen pile, because these guys are unpredictable. Pitching injuries are totally unpredictable. And it's just kind of opens the doors for guys like a Justin DeFreitas, maybe somebody like Jonathan Arroyo, and a couple other guys.
Peralta, for sure.
Yeah,
I think Peralta makes it now. I really do.
Do you really? Yeah. I mean, his stuff hit. He is legendary as a clubhouse presence. Mm-hmm. I mean, as soon as the Mariners picked him up, I had RJ Anderson, who formerly ran D-Rays Bay, now runs for Prospect.
Beyond the box score, too.
Yeah, beyond the box score.
I'm a huge RJ Anderson fan.
Lit up my Twitter feed about what an amazing influence this guy was on the Rays. And not in any one particular way, but he just apparently has this sort of personality magnetism that people just gravitate towards. So he's the kind of guy that you kind of want to make an excuse to be around anyway, but I'm kind of worried about the stuff, guys, because he took a big step back. He's definitely towards the end of his rope. So, you know, the door's open if he can force his way through. But what do you guys feel about that?
I think if you're DePoto or Service, you're hoping he has 1 year or, I mean, maybe even 2 months left, right?
Which and, may be all they need, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to know, especially with Cook and Scribner being down with lat strains. I mean, those can play out all year, or they can literally be just a pulled muscle. So, it's a weird industry injury to speculate on.
In many ways, it's like a family of injuries. Like it's a whole, like there's a whole spectrum of things that could be.
Yeah.
Like you've got like your mild lat strains, and you have your Stephen Pryors, where like his muscle is like reconnecting in some weird way that the human body isn't designed to work, and that he's never the same again. So I mean, it's definitely not something where you say 4 to 6 weeks, but I mean, that's I don't want to disparage the medical people in charge of that diagnosis, but we've just seen it go shorter and longer than that. So they're definitely going to be testing their bullpen depth at first. And you're right, like Peralta, Scott, Peralta may only need to go 2 months, and just bridge that gap. We talked last week about the idea of the bullpen not really getting settled till, you know, June, July anyway.
Sure.
Yeah. And he may be one of these guys that only sticks around for, you know, a month or two. I mean, he's going to turn 40 before the season starts.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting. I've been looking at some of his things, and although the performance, like the regular metrics that you'd look at, don't look so great, Sierra was okay last year. Velocity was not super down from the year before, so nothing too critical there. One thing that I did find interesting is he threw his fastball more than he'd thrown it in the last 5 years. So he threw fastball 50% of the time last year, and even though there was no big shift in velocity, there was a change in his arsenal, and I'm not sure why that happened. But velocity was down, but it wasn't a critical down. but it was down enough so that, you know, if you look at career paths, you can kind of see that maybe this might be the year where we see the huge drop, right? It went from it went down like 0.8. And when you start getting into the age that he's at, you're just trying to get as much out of it as you can. And I mean, hey, contract is what it is. It's great. You get whatever you can get out of him.
Sure.
And if it's 2 months, it's awesome. I mean, it's everything is relative to the price that you paid for him, right? And the price is right. Sure. So
yeah,
if he can fill that gap while we get a couple guys back and healthy, then it's a great signing.
No question. That's what you're looking for out of the minor league, you know, signees. And you know, maybe that works against him as you have to clear space on the 40 man for Peralta. But I mean, let's be honest, you have Steve Barron currently on the 40 man. So there's room to clear.
So. Yeah, there certainly isn't. Yeah. You guys, I we haven't talked about this at all. I was just something really struck me when Scott was just talking about Peralta, just this era that we're living in. I feel like one of the cool things about baseball that I've always felt like is that for every major layer that we go down, it's like Inception. Like, we can always go deeper with baseball, and everything that we've everything we find out about it just leads to more questions. Like, we're fully on into this like extremely in-depth statistical era with like pitch effects with pitchers, and it's just amazing that somebody with Peralta, like those kind of stats, Scott, that you're talking about with his fastball usage and his velocity and all of this stuff, and it's amazing that we have all of this data and we're still just kind of viewing pitchers as this like, holy shit, I hope everything works this year because I have no idea.
Because there's no
well relievers especially. I mean, it doesn't matter a guy's age. You get a reliever that's like 24 and you have no idea what you're gonna get.
Right. Well, and what's funny with Peralta is in his career he's seen that change of statistics where when he first came up, no one was talking about his fastball rate or
know. And we all talk about, like, and this is the thing with pitching stats is like I still feel like we don't have great predictive stats for pitchers, you know, starter or reliever. We have a good idea, like you know, Miguel Cabrera is going to rake, we know that. Sure. Mike Trout's one of the like one or two best position players.
He's gonna eat Subway.
We know both of those.
He's gonna break some windows.
but honestly, like, we would be very sad. But if Felix Hernandez has an ERA over 4 this year, are we gonna be particularly surprised?
Oof.
Like, will that be it will be disappointing.
Over 4, I don't know. Over 3.5, maybe no, but over 4.
I guess in this offensive environment,
we're all just. I mean,
now, I'm not
making. We're all just waiting for his elbow to blow, right?
That's it. No, we're all waiting for his elbow to blow. Stop! I just made a cross at the microphone. You are not allowed to say that. That's a bad example to draw, Felix.
I don't mean to detour too much, but do you guys believe Andy Van Slyke when he says that his elbow is whatever 30% torn or whatever,
and
the Mariners are just waiting for it to go?
That's kind of my question. I
can't imagine why that would not be true, and it would make total sense given the career path and everything. Like, I'm inclined to believe
that whole interview was such a flame out that it's hard for me to, on one hand, believe it, but on the other hand, it's like he had to mentally be like, you know what, here, the hatch is open. Here's it all.
It's a very specific thing to call out, so.
Which is just terrifying.
Well, yeah. It is what it is. I mean, every pitcher is working against time, and
sure.
If you want to get metaphysical, we're all working against time, so whatever.
Ooh.
I mean, Felix has contract provisions that protect the team if he has serious injury, and that's a really cool thing. But
that was $1 million in the last year of the deal.
Yeah, if he suffered, it's an elbow injury that he has to suffer, and it's a certain amount.
Yeah,
but we can't dwell on this. We just can't.
Okay. All right.
We just can't.
No, I mean, it's all about just hedging for the worst, which is just like you can, or you can spend time thinking about something else.
Yeah, exactly. And but my greater point was just that, you know, we are willing to accept fluctuation in pitcher performance much more so than we are with position players, because we still just don't really get how pitchers work. It's just weird. They're still just really damn weird.
And I sort of wrote a piece that touched on it, that Brendan Golowski did a ton of help with me on, but I think the crux of anticipating a pitcher's performance that we'll never quite touch is this whole concept of pitch sequencing, which I think ultimately speaks to the very, very core of baseball, which is what pitch to throw when to which batter in what specific scenario. And it's so fluctuating, and just I don't think there's any way to really grasp it with numbers or with, I mean, anything except for there's just, you know, there's an aspect of random luck.
Yeah, absolutely. There is just randomness in pitchers. They don't play as much as position players, so their sample size is smaller, and there's so much more out of their control. And I mean, that's the whole idea behind BABIP and, you know, this idea that you want to get the ball on the ground because it gives you a better chance of getting it out. Yep. But who knows? I mean, they're just dealing.
Well, that's why I love Sierra. I mean, that's my favorite kind of peripheral stat to look at for pitchers is batted ball profiles. And as you look at predictive into the future, I really love Sierra. So
toot toot. And what's the best place
toot, toot. To
get Sierra?
Fangraphs.com.
Thank you, Zach Sanders, staff writer.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know, I mean, I'll probably butcher the representation of Sierra, but it basically is an ERA estimator based on expected outcomes of batted ball profiles. So you expect a certain amount of runs from this many ground balls and this many fly balls and this many line drives and such and so on. So there's a subjective nature to grading what's a line drive and what's a fly ball, but I really like it a lot, and I've found it to actually be pretty predictive over the years. So
yeah, in many ways we're living in the era as far as pitcher stats and pitcher knowledge of like, hey, we just figured out what the wheel is, and Sierra is like kind of making a slightly better wheel in that
way. It's going to be very outdated in 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, sure. But you know, but for what it is right now, it's a step in the right direction. It's a notch in progress towards, you know, better understanding of, again, just why one of the reasons I love baseball. There's just still so many things that we don't know that we can't quite figure out because of how we want to be able to predict and understand the random, and we just as a species struggle with the fact that there's a lot of things outside of our control. This episode's going to get a little deeper, I guess. So guys,
I guess I wanted to roll back around really quick before we move on from the bullpen.
I want to go back to the bullpen. Oh, so okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say something to keep a pin on though is, you know, just this morning, and well, I guess this morning plus the following morning, we were blasted with the news that three separate bullpen pitchers have, you know, something like an injury strain. Mm-hmm. And of course, one of them is Danny Holson,
which is just so sad. Yeah.
It's so sad. But also, I think something to keep a pin in for, you know, years down the road is, you know, Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais clearly talked about this dogma of we don't want to overwork the pitchers. But why are we having three bullpen arms all of a sudden in the same couple days have an issue with, you know, some sort of muscle soreness, you know, one in the shoulder, two in the lat. And maybe that's something we keep an eye on going down the road. Is there something about, because they're very specific about one more day between bullpens, but maybe they're overworking them in the weight room between those bullpen days or something. It's just an interesting set of circumstances where you have three pitchers from the bullpen all having some sort of fatigue injury.
Well, Holson, I feel like was a six-sided die with like five sides coming up injury. Totally. So
I'm so sad about that.
It's a bummer, really, but you know, even you know,
it doesn't sound dire.
Yeah, he and Ryan Divish, the beat reporter for the Seattle Times, both kind of gave off the impression that like this is a temporary thing and he'll bounce back. So, you know, I don't know with Holson. David, I mean, you could very well be right, but we're just grasping at straws there trying to find reason.
Of course, it's the first offseason.
Yeah, and we have no idea what's going on there. And even then, you know, for years, the Mariners have avoided Tommy John surgery better than almost any organization in baseball through multiple front offices.
Sure.
And is that something that the medical staff is good at, or is that just them knocking on a better wood than anybody else? Like what?
Well, they're not good at keeping fingernails on fingers.
Well, that's the,
you know, that
you got to factor in the Canadian like there's a whole,
there's some sort of sea salt intolerance.
Sea salt intolerance. So who do you guys see with the bullpen kind of like, do you guys have a couple of favorites that you, now that, you know, Cook and Scribner don't look, they're both right-handed. They're both, they're both primarily kind of single inning, maybe two inning, late inning guys. Like, do you have guys that either you're rooting for that you feel like are a strong candidate to now win the job on opening day?
Yeah. So I actually, I know I'm kind of a little weirdly married to him because of a strange article I wrote, but, and I also recapped today, but Cody Martin got actually a three inning role today, which was the first inning was a little shaky, but it was super clear they were, you know, telling him pretty much every third pitch had to be a curveball and working on it. And besides the first inning where, you know, he left a couple up and too far in, he looked really strong, to be honest. And to be this early in spring throwing three relatively strong innings, I think speaks to his ability to take on a workload and maybe down the line, you know, pitch one solid inning out of the pen.
Sure.
He's going to have to. And then also I'm pretty excited for Zach Sanders to publish tomorrow the case for Blake Parker, which is a fascinating piece for the Mariners because he's a righty with a reverse split. And he's a fly ball righty with a reverse split, which I think plays pretty well in Safeco Field because his one tendency is he'll hang a slider and every once in a while gets hit out. But obviously Safeco is going to dampen that effect.
Yeah.
So he's definitely a dark horse. Arrow didn't really impress me. Granted, he only got one inning.
Yep.
And we already touched on Peralta, who I thought from the outset was probably going to have a shot at making it. So yeah. I think Peralta gets
he's not a guy then, you bring in to put in the minor leagues for sure.
Yeah.
Scott, you have any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, we talked about Peralta a bit earlier, but yeah. I mean, let's be real. There's a chance that he could fill that role for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and he could also be Cameron Lowe, which I also talked about last week.
he's way better looking than Cameron Lowe.
It could be much less lurchy. he could be in and out in 3 weeks and then gone. So, I don't know. I think the major beneficiaries from this are definitely TZ, Tony. I think that locks up a spot for him.
Yep.
Yeah. I think he was maybe a 60% fringe guy before. I mean, he was favored to be in, but
he just had some. He had an option left, so
he had to earn it. Yeah.
I think this locks it in for sure. And then I think Peralta is the next guy up, and I think that it just, you know, it makes sense and they'll give him a shot because he's the veteran and he's going to get the first crack at it. And, you know, Peralta's gone. If he doesn't, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Is when you break camp, you're going to give preference to the guys who are going to be gone. Right.
Absolutely.
Totally.
The guys who have options, they're going to be the secondary options.
Yep.
And you can go ahead and give guys like Peralta a shot. And if it works out, great. And if it doesn't, you cut him, and hopefully he doesn't blow three games and
for sure
ruin your season.
Honestly, for Peralta, what he has going for him is, just like in any other job search, being someone who just works well with the other people puts you leaps and bounds ahead.
Yeah, and baseball's like any other industry in that respect.
Exactly, and if he's truly, you know, a clubhouse chemistry guy, like everyone is telling us he is, that is, especially to Jerry DePoto, from what we can glean, is going to mean something.
Jerry loves to smile.
Yes, he does.
Is Peralta older than Jerry DePoto?
Not by much. Were they ever teammates? That would be a great thing to look
man.
Up. I should look it up at some point. You know, I kind of think that I agree with you guys on Peralta, and using kind of the same methodology that Scott's just talking about there, Dark Horse candidate that I would still keep an eye on because he's just getting started, but I've heard some good things about him so far, is Mike Montgomery. If they decide to give him a shot on the bullpen. Brendan,
because they lose him too.
Yeah, he has no options left. I mean, he's an arm that threw, I mean, as fluky as you want to call it, he threw complete back-to-back complete game shutouts last year. One against the Royals, struck out 11 batters in one of those games. He's got the ability is there somewhere. And as Brendan wrote during the offseason, that kind of left-handed arm, you want to try it in the bullpen before you just say goodbye to it.
Yeah, he's got so much cool junk.
Yeah, and you know, he's a former first round draft pick.
Yep.
And I just wouldn't be surprised if they give him a shot out there and see how the stuff plays.
I mean, former top 20 prospect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Really? I mean,
and we haven't even talked, by the way,
that's
Justin
DeFratis.
Yeah, we'll see where Montgomery goes. And that's 80% Brendan, and someday we'll actually have Brendan on the podcast so that like he can just say his smart stuff. Yeah, he can just say his smart shit on the podcast as opposed to us saying Brendan told me blah 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 blah. Because then someday Brendan will be like employed by a Major League Baseball team and we'll have to again go back to saying Brendan told me blah 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 because
Brendan's gonna be the podcast. He's not gonna have time for us. He'll be the commish.
Oh yeah. Brendan is the commissioner. that's a great thought.
But I guess what we're talking about is I think there's two spots up for grabs ultimately in the bullpen?
Probably, yeah.
So yeah, I mean the position battles are getting it's kind of early in spring, but we pretty much know the scope of things.
Yeah, it's the bullpen, it's the first base platoon, and then the utility guy. Those are kind of the three ones that are getting fought out. You've got your two catchers figured out. You've got, you know, a lot of the positions figured out. I'm planning on writing about the utility position battle later this week or early next week. And I've had a couple conversations with people, and it's really interesting to try to figure out, you know, not only what is the best decision for the Mariners, but just how do major league teams view the utility role and what's important, like what are they looking for in that spot? And now I mean, to me, it's pretty much down to Chris Taylor, Luis Sardinas and Sean O'Malley. And they all have varying degrees of experience and skills. And I don't think that one is necessarily particularly better than the other. They just all provide different pros and cons. It's a really interesting look at what the organization is going to choose to prioritize. Has anything stood out from you guys for those three?
Speaking for myself, I think what puts Sardinas ahead of Taylor for me, and I don't know where O'Malley fits into this, but the fact that they were comfortable enough to give Sardinas two innings in center field today says something. Granted, he had literally zero plays, so we didn't see his skill set at all. But we haven't seen Taylor out there yet, and certainly
I don't think you will either.
I don't think you will, and you need someone who's, I mean, ideally, this utility position that they're all fighting for probably needs to be able to cover center, which we know O'Malley can do. And I think that maybe puts, exactly, yeah. And maybe that puts both of them ahead of Taylor.
Yeah, I
go this ahead, Scott. This is my question about the. I mean, if we're thinking from a philosophical standpoint, I think Taylor's the guy you want in that job because you still don't know exactly what Chris Taylor is on the major league level. Like you've seen a sample, but is it enough to conclude that's what his career is? So if you're talking about future upside and there's a definite sophomore slump possibility with Ketel Marte, and you want that second level of security for sure. But the interesting thing that David was talking about is center field. Like, if it is Chris Taylor, what happens there? Like, I'm really not sure if the Mariners are comfortable ever putting Franklin Gutierrez back in center field again.
I don't think they want to. Yeah. They're talking about Norman Aoki.
I just don't think they can do it. Yeah. I don't think they can do it.
I don't think he wants to. So he sounds really hesitant to try it.
It's definitely hesitant. Granted, the response to the question being directly asked of him this spring was much more maybe than last year's hard no, but it still seems very hesitant.
I feel like, and this is kind of something that just in the feelers that I've put out there in the industry and just trying to get an idea too, I think there's something to the fact too that organizations are always juggling this balance between what's best for the major league roster today, what's best for the player as a whole, and what's best at maximizing the player's value going forward if we ever decide to get rid of them. And you're looking at three guys where Luis Sardinas is 22 and recently a top 100 prospect in the major leagues. Like, do you want to already pigeonhole this guy as a utility baseball player?
Yeah, like, maybe he's your future second baseman.
Or do you want to just make another team think that he's their future second baseman? Mm-hmm. You want to put him in AAA and let him develop that fully. And kind of the same thing with Chris Taylor. Like, I'm not sure. I don't know. Like, if you want to talk opening day 2016, who do I think is the very best baseball player? My instinct and kind of my eye test and just what I think is probably Sardinas. But I think maybe the guy that, you know.
Yeah, but Sardinas, Sardinas can't hit at all.
I haven't seen it from Taylor, though. I just don't see the skill set there,
but frankly. Here's the thing. Taylor at least has a track record of being able to hit in the minors. Sardinas has none. He has none. He's never hit in the minors. I guess maybe
it's rose-colored glasses from seeing Sardinas hit in his first week of spring training. But he's also – he looks like he can pick it a bit.
He's a great athlete and a great glove.
He's the classic prospect rating of a guy that has an amazing glove and you hope that the bat develops.
Sure.
And he's 22. We can't judge the guy, but unfortunately –
he's Ketel Marte's age.
Yeah, but that's the funny thing is this happens a lot with middle infield prospects is that the glove goes so far and it gets you to the point in the career where they're ready to be in the majors, but the bat isn't ready.
Totally.
And then you go in this kind of like in between phase where are they ready to go? Are they ready to not go? And then it's too soon. And sometimes they stick if the glove is good enough, like
sometimes they want you to be a better hitter than you're ready to be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he doesn't have any track record of that, but yet he's in the position now where he's either going to be the guy, which he has no shot at being. Now we know that. He's not going to be the guy this year. Or is he going to go back to AAA and is he going to flounder? Is he going to be the guy that all of a sudden bounces back and forth and that stunts the career development? So he's a really interesting case study at this point. And that whole thing is fascinating to me.
That's a great point, Scott.
Do you go with the homegrown talent that you've had for a while that has mashed in AAA but has had the opportunity and he's fallen flat? Like Sardinas has fallen flat too. He's fallen very flat at the major league level, but he hasn't fallen flat with the Mariners.
Exactly.
And so there's always you've got a new regime in, you've got a new coaching staff. Like, how do they view him differently? Do they think they can fix him? The whole thing is very, very interesting to me.
Well, and I talked, and I don't want to spoil what I'm going to write about with this.
Yeah, don't ruin your piece.
I don't want to ruin my piece too much, but I talked to a National League scout yesterday about Sardinas, and the idea that I got was when the Brewers acquired him last year, they thought they were getting an everyday major league middle infielder. So Scott, when you're saying that he washed out, but hasn't done it with the Mariners, he washed. That's exactly what happened in Milwaukee. He washed out in Milwaukee. They thought they had a thing
at what 21, 22,
which is outrageous.
And he wasn't that. And you know, the other thing I want to make sure that I comment on is when you say that when you're talking about people projecting that bat from a glove first, and usually that doesn't end up working out, but sometimes you're that glove, and a team gives you a 7-year, $100 million deal because you're Elvis Andrews, and we should all just take this moment to laugh at the Rangers, who are way better than the Mariners traditionally over the last 10 years. But hey, that contract was really dumb. Good job, John Daniels.
Remember when they were just like the doormat? God, those were the times.
Yeah, those were the days.
Pudge Rodriguez was just flailing at the plate.
Yeah, it was good times. I remember when all they had was Rusty Greer. And Edgar Martinez was dropping 3 home runs a game out there. But, I think there's a chance. And again, just from putting it out there and just kind of trying to feel like what people are looking, I think that the utility spot is a little bit different than a lot of other places. It's almost the bullpen of the position player role, where like there's other things that go into this than just upside or talent level. Like, you want a guy that mentally can embrace that role, or maybe it's more like the DH, where you can get this not playing every day. Like, I've got to wrap my head around, I could be playing anywhere. And I think that there's a chance that somebody like O'Malley has a real chance at this, not just due to the fact that he's got the most experience playing both outfield and infield, and is a little bit older, which I think teams are more comfortable with these guys. But this idea also that like out of Sean O'Malley, Chris Taylor, and Luis Sardinas, if you tell one of those three, if you go to them, if you're Scott Service and you call one of those three into your office and say, I just wanted to tell you, I've got a spot on my 25-man roster for you, but I don't know how often you're going to play, and I don't know where you're going to play. Which of those three do you think is going to just be so pumped and going to be there every single day ready to play?
Because
that's O'Malley's career. That's his ceiling. That's the best he will ever do. And so I don't know if he's going to last the whole year. I don't know if he's going to be great. But I kind of am feeling that O'Malley may have a shot at doing this.
And that's where I was going to go with the age factor, because you have Sardinas at 22, Taylor at 25, and O'Malley at 28. And for O'Malley, Exactly. His ceiling is probably this utility guy. Maybe if he has just an absolute I'm on fire year, a team picks him up to play a plus defense corner next season.
Maybe.
But this exactly. That's a long ceiling maybe. Yeah. But you almost like O'Malley, because another aspect of this utility position that I think we haven't touched on quite yet is, frankly, the guy has to be able to steal some bags, probably. Like, he's going to be pinch run a lot.
He's got
to
get on base. O'Malley, yes. O'Malley's
O'Malley and O'Malley's a grinder. He sees
the damn Z, you yes. guys.
And this team's all about seeing that Z, baby.
Yeah, you got to see that Z. So, you know, what's O'Malley going to do if he's not the utility guy for the Mariners? He'll go to mm-hmm. AAA, and he's a lifer. He'll stick it out. That's fine. But I just feel like for various reasons, he's got positional flexibility. He'd love to get the job. He will be a positive influence in the clubhouse. He will make whoever it is that's sitting out for O'Malley that day is not going to feel weird about the guy that's about the guy that's subbing in for them being prepared. Service is going to know that he's going to be prepared, just because, you know, he's basically Rudy. Like, he just wants to get yeah. on the damn field.
Well, and that's what you like about sticking, you know, Taylor and especially Sardinas can both go down to AAA and it doesn't feel wrong because they're young enough where
Sardinas more than Taylor.
Yeah, of course. Sure. Yeah. I mean, Taylor's 25. He's Taylor's gonna turn trade 26 bait, man. This year.
I really think
he's got end of the day.
He belongs Taylor in another org. Unless Marte.
He belonged in it. He belonged in another org a year ago.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
for the first half really of did. This year, he's Marte insurance. I feel like, but if yes. Marte proves that he's not an anomaly, then there's no place for Taylor. So
here's my thing with Sardinas, and I'll just put this in real quick. I feel like if you're going to carry a utility infielder, they have to be adequate or plus at multiple positions offensively, or they have to hit. And Sardinas' glove really plays at shortstop, but do we really know how it plays elsewhere? Because the bat, at this point, if you're projecting the bat on a major league level, it's bad.
Unacceptable.
Right, it's bad.
It's Mariner.
It's
theory, it's
very bad. So can you carry? It's one thing if you're a rebuilding club and you're going to hand the guy the shortstop job and you're going to be like, this shortstop, we know he's going to hit for like a 50 WRC plus, like it's going to be bad, but the glove is going to be great. If that's your guy that's going to be making spot starts at second base, at third base, and center field, like, can you really carry that? At this stage, I just can't imagine that the Mariners go with that.
Yep.
I just can't see it.
Yep, I agree. And you know, that's another factor that we didn't talk about with the utility role is just what is it? What are you willing to deal with offensively? And it's all just an equation. It's all a mix of things that goes in there. And it's really, guys, I think it's one of the most fascinating battles going on in camp. The only other one being first base, which we can talk about after. I think we're going to introduce our first guest after our break. We had a nice little connection there. David and local product, Matt Boyd, who's now pitching in the Tiger system, has been kind enough to join us. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to have some water. We will have other things that have water in it. And we'll be back after, and we'll have a Matt Boyd with us for a few minutes. So hold on for that. Okay, we're excited here at Dome and Bedlam to welcome our first guest, and that is a local boy made Major League Baseball player, Matt Boyd. Matt is a graduate of Eastside Catholic. Before playing his college baseball at Oregon State, he's now a member of the Detroit Tigers system. Matt, thank you so much for being with us, man. We're really excited to have you.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and you actually know, unfortunately, my co-host David. David, what's the connection there?
So Matt and I go back to probably when we were 12 years old. We started facing each other in ball, and and actually we ended up transferring without ever talking about it together to the high school we graduated from as sophomores.
Wow.
Exactly. Yeah.
Small world. And now Matt's trying to make the major leagues and hanging out with Justin Verlander and Miguel Cabrera. And David, you're hanging out with me. So you've both had great success in life.
Yeah, the paths have been amazing.
So, so David, why don't you go ahead and take the lead here and actually sure. not waste our guest time.
Sure. So, so Maddie, you had an absolutely whirlwind first year in the bigs, you know, getting called up and then getting traded and then, you know, being a full-time guy for the Tigers. So, and you, if I'm correct, you weren't in major league spring camp last year, right? You were in minor league?
No. Yeah. I was in minor league camp.
So what was the time like in AAA, and what was the call up like that first taste with the Blue Jays?
Well, it was awesome. You know, I actually started the year in AA. I was in AA until June, mm-hmm. It was awesome. You know, I actually made a few off season adjustments and got a lot stronger and
sure.
You know, came in throwing harder and really probably had one of my best seasons yet. And, you know, spent the first 2 months in AA, spent a few starts in AAA, and then I got called up and made my debut. It was pretty cool.
And you at the end of the year, won Minor League Pitcher of the Year, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's absolutely fantastic.
Blue Jays organization?
Thank you. I mean, technically, yeah, pretty much Blue Jays. I mean, it's just – I won it. It was like all – It wasn't just it was like all minor league baseball.
I'm making you sing your praises, Matt. It's fine. Congratulations, man. That's a huge accomplishment.
It's cool.
Yeah, it's totally fine. So, what team did you make your major league debut in against, Matt?
Texas Rangers.
And was that at home or on the road?
It was on the road.
So were your folks?
I'm sorry. No. It was at home in Toronto.
And your folks were able to make it out there, and your family and everybody was able to get out there and see you.
Yeah, it was a pretty crazy. Kind of whirlwind. I was supposed to start on a Thursday in Buffalo, which is the AAA affiliate, and it was a day game. I was showing up. I got scratched from my start, and really didn't know why they said you're pitching on Saturday.
Damn.
And I was like, okay, it was a travel day. They go, and you know, so we went through the game. After the game, we got called back in the office. They're like, hey, you're actually not going to travel. You're going to hang behind. Tomorrow night you're going to get a call and you're either going to be pitching in Toronto or you're going to be pitching in Scranton. And I was like, well, sweet. So wife and I hung out. We were still living in a hotel cause we didn't know, you know, we'd just gotten to Buffalo, about a week and a half earlier. And, so we're just hanging out. And that Friday came around about 5:00. We got the call and, called my parents. They got on the first flight. Out, I think it
so cool.
At midnight, and called Ashley's parents, and they flew out at probably.
Oh, wow, that's great.
They flew out that night as well. They were all. It was pretty cool. Everyone was there, and it was a special day. Jeez. On Saturday.
Do you remember who pitched for the Rangers that game?
Giovanni Gallardo. He went. Oops. I went. Giovanni Gallardo. He got the win. He went one of the games the Blue Jays actually got shut out last year. But yeah, he actually went complete game shutty.
Whew.
Yeah.
And then didn't you face Cueto like two or three times?
Twice.
Two times within your opening like four starts.
Yeah, I actually faced Royals four outings. I think out of my 11 starts I had I faced the Royals four times. I faced the Rangers three times. Had
crazy.
Houston in there. Yeah, had
jeez.
Minnesota. So I had a lot. I had a good handful of playoff teams. It was fun. I loved it.
Damn. So you talked a bit about making an off-season adjustment last off-season. Were those?
Well, one of the big ones was I've always been a command pitcher, and mm-hmm. always been had the ability to throw, you know, four pitches for a strike. Kind of totally. In the count, but I had an average fastball at about my average fastball is probably 87, 88 miles per hour. And the year before mm-hmm. that off season, I you know, at Oregon State the year before, year after I left, they had picked up this new weighted ball program called Driveline, which is based out of Puyallup.
Yeah, a lot of our listeners have heard of that. Now. Yeah.
And, exactly. So I went down there and, you know, got with Kyle Bodie and we started training, you know, and I was just like, you know, what the heck? I talked to my Oregon State coach, Nate Yeske, mm-hmm. who was our pitching coach, and,
yeah.
you know, a lot of guys down there had a lot of success with it. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to give it a shot. So I got in touch with Kyle and kind of went at it full tilt and raised my average fastball. I think for a good portion of the season, it was 92, 93.
And incredible results.
Kind of fell off the last month, yeah, as my innings went up. But
totally.
But it was a big jump for me.
Is that a training program that you've continued to use in the offseason? I'm not familiar enough with a starting pitcher's offseason training program to know if that's
something
you would do. Okay.
Yeah, you were there this offseason, right, Maddie?
I was, yeah. I was there there a lot. They moved up to Kent, and they got a good group of guys down there, so it was pretty sweet.
Matt, can I ask you a question, just circling back to something that you kind of touched on there about your big league debut? You said you and your wife were living in a hotel when you got the call about how everything was going to happen there, which for most of us that aren't professional baseball players who, you know, we like our comfort and our routine and our homes, it just sounds incredibly stressful and difficult, like a difficult work environment. I know that comes with the job and that's kind of part of being a pro baseball player, but is there a certain mental discipline? Is there a place or like a process you go through to kind of try to block out that stress of not really having a home, of jumping around, not necessarily knowing where you're going to be, being a player that's bounced around between AAA and the major leagues a little bit?
You know, you just have confidence in yourself. You mm-hmm. know, it doesn't matter who I'm pitching against. I just know out there, I'm going to go out there. I got my convictions and I'm going to go dominate. And that's just kind of the mentality you got to have, you know, but luckily I married my best friend. I got the best wife in the world.
She's the best, by the way.
And she's solid. She's awesome. Ashley's great. You know, she takes care of me. You know, when we got moved, I played for 5 different teams last year. So when we got called up, you know, she loaded up the pickup and kind of said where to. And,
for sure.
She's a professional packer. So, she had that down to an art. So luckily I had the best support on my side, that I could focus on the on-field stuff and not have to worry about, you know, getting trucked to point A to point B and whatnot. Totally. But you just got to take that mentality of just, you have no control over that stuff. All you have control over is getting the ball every fifth day and just going out there and competing.
I want to ask one more question, then I'm going to let David take control again.
So
just going back off of that again, obviously on game days, you were a starting pitcher for the majority of your time. I think maybe your entire time in the bigs, but I may be wrong there.
Yeah.
You were, okay. So you weren't working in relief at all. So you're on that every five-day routine. When you have a chance, when you're not necessarily hyper-focused on your next start, I mean, Matt, in a lot of ways, you're like me, you're like David, you're like a lot of our listeners. You're a kid that grew up in the Northwest. We can all relate to the experience of growing up loving baseball. Did you let mm-hmm. yourself during off days just kind of pinch yourself a little bit that, like, you know, hey, that's Johnny Cueto on the other mound. I'm in the dugout with Miguel Cabrera and Justin Verlander. Like, were there moments where you let the little kid in you come out there? Like, maybe you didn't express that, but you just kind of looked around and took it all in?
Yeah, yes, definitely, without a doubt. I'm so grateful to be there, and it's an honor to play, be around guys like Ver and guys like Miggy that, you know, are great in this game, guys mm-hmm. that are going to go down, you know, as one of the greats, you know, arguably Hall of Famer. So, I mean, that's an honor in itself, but, I mean, it comes down to it, you know, they're also your teammate, you know,
they're also
the guys that you're going to go to battle with. Yep. So, I mean, they're like, I remember when I walked into, it was definitely like that, you know, when I first got called up to Detroit, I was walking into that locker room and it was like, dang, this is like Verlander starting. I'm staying out of his way.
Yeah.
And, you know, just Mickey's. And then, but then the next day I show back up to the field, I get my first big league win. Jeez. And Ver and Kins and Miggy and gosh, whoever else is dumping beer on my head, you know, giving me a beer shower. And then you're just part of it, right? Yep. Like, these are just, it's all the guys working towards a collective goal.
Yeah.
And it's those guys in the clubhouse, man, it's, you definitely recognize what they've done. There's no doubt in that. You know, it's special, and it's special to watch them day in and day out and realize how great they are and how they go about their business. But when it comes down to it, you're all wearing that uniform, and that name on the front, you know, means more than the name on the back, and you guys are all going out there to win a title, and that's what we're going to do this year.
David, do you have a – I see here on our little itinerary, you have any follow-up questions about the Detroit locker room you want to ask?
Oh, so I was wondering, who in that locker room do you think would be the best chef?
Best chef?
Yeah.
Because I know you like your food, Matt. I do. I don't miss a meal. You know, gosh, best chef. I got to say – James McCann, my catcher.
Really?
Catcher. He's a
that makes sense.
Probably a pretty dang good chef.
Catchers can't be missing meals either, man.
Well, I mean, he was from Cali, but he went to Arkansas, okay. So he's got a little bit of that West Coast taste, and also got a little Southern flair. So yeah. he's probably one of the better chefs. Kinsler, I feel like Ian Kinsler knows way around a grill too.
Interesting, of course.
So yeah, of course, of course.
And then I was also wondering, what's the weirdest superstition in that locker room right now? If you can share.
Weirdest superstition? Oh man, I gotta say I don't know. I couldn't answer that one. I don't know what some of those other guys do. It's probably good that I don't.
So you kind of touched on like arriving in the Detroit locker room and being like, you know, because there's some dudes in there. What was your holy crap, I'm in the big leagues moment?
Probably my first outing. I mean, I was sitting there and I'm pitching against, pitching against Texas in Toronto and
Beltre.
You know, I'm warming up, and yeah, the first guy I faced, the leadoff guy, is Sinshu Chu, and I remember him coming up with through Tacoma and in Seattle. Sure. You know, growing up as a Mariner fan, so I was like, dang, this is the guy. Like I remember when he had all his promises.
Totally.
One of those guys out of Korea. So it was like, and then I struck him out, and I was like, I snapped off a 2-2 slider and punched him out, and it was like, dang, like that dang. Just happened. Like,
Maddie,
oh my gosh.
That's wild.
Yeah.
And then honestly, facing Beltre too, having him.
Oh gosh.
That's what I always wanted to ask you about. What was that like? Because growing up in Seattle, Beltre, when we were in high school, was the dude.
Oh, he was, and honestly, he still is. He's one of he's pretty damn good. I freaked out one time. He was my second outing against him against Texas. I was going pretty good. It was a better one, and I forget something happened and. Right after his at bat came around, I don't know if I got a pickoff or something went wrong. Something happened in favor for us, and he came out hot at the umpire and started. And it was and I heard it. I was on the mound and I heard, and you know, it's a good 90 feet to that dugout, and I could hear him clear. And I was like, and he was intense, and it stopped the game for 10 minutes. And I was like, oh shoot, I'm not gonna say a word. I'm letting him have his time. Like, he's, you know.
That's Adrian Beltre.
Yeah, that's Adrian Beltre.
Only Felix gets to talk to Adrian when he's on the mound.
So Maddie, what park coming up are you most excited to throw in?
Oh man, I mean, you know, that's anytime you throw it up in a big league ballpark, it's pretty special. Sure. But I gotta say, it's going to be a dream to pitch in Safeco as a big leaguer. You know, I got to pitch there as a collegiate, and I got to pitch there in high school. But being there as a big leaguer will be special. And it'll be special, you know, have guys like you in the crowd and everyone from back home and family.
I'm going to be booing you,
Daddy. Oh, man. You're probably going to end up on the wrong end of that one, though, man. It'll be cool. I'm excited for that. It'll be a dream come true. I remember, I didn't get to go to opening night at Safeco in '99, but I got to go to the second game. And dang. I mean, heck, I grew up a diehard Mariner fan, sure. And I grew up with King Griffey Jr. And you know, Randy Johnson is the guys I looked up to. So it's those are guys my heroes, and you know, it'd be pretty special after watching those guys play there. Johnson obviously for different teams, not for the Mariners, it'll be surreal to play against the Mariners.
Did you get to? Do you remember if they won that game, that second game at Safeco Field?
No, I couldn't tell you, but I got this picture with it's like framework, and it's like the inaugural homestand, and it's out there on the patio above the bullpen, and we got Junior in center field. It's with my dad and I. It's pretty special.
That's pretty great.
Got that one back home at the on the nightstand.
So Maddie, what's your first experience with a major league spring training like? Like, you know, what's the different vibe? What's the pace? What's your day to day?
Well, day to day, you know, I'm a big early riser, so I get there early and I get my work in. I'm there by 7 a.m. every day, but it's awesome because you're just around guys that. I mean, you know, I'm fighting for a rotation spot, and and there's 8 or 9 of us that are doing the same thing. But whatever way it shakes out, we're gonna have one, in my opinion, we're gonna have one of the best rotations in baseball, and all that competition just breeds success, and we're pushing each other, and it's awesome learning from guys like Ver and Zim, and learning from Pelf, you know, Sanji. Totally. Like, you're learning from all these guys that have been around the game and had a lot of success, and play the game on the highest, on the biggest stage, and they're all stars. And I mean, it's crazy. So it's an awesome atmosphere, and you get in, you get your work in, you know, you get to play baseball. It's great.
Sure. So I kind of have two questions off of what you just said. Yeah. So first of all, there's a lot of talk right now in the Detroit media about the coaches really, really loving your slider. Which is funny for me to read, because growing up facing you and playing with you, it was always your curve, which is still like probably the stupidest pitch I've ever seen. So how's your slider feeling? And then I guess my second question was, you know, what do you get in Ver's ear a lot? Is he, you know, are you learning grips from him? What's the deal with you and Ver?
Oh, awesome. So, I mean,
two kind of separate questions, but
yeah, well, I mean, the first one, you know, it's like, I've always had a curveball's always been my pitch, and in college I picked up a slider, and it kind of was more of like a slurve type pitch, and I used that, you know, it was always my out pitch and whatnot, and kind of coming in this last year, I just lost feel for it,
with,
you know, this last season before, so when I got to Detroit, it just. Honestly, August to September was a non-factor. I really was a three-pitch guy. Once in a while, I'd throw a slider, and it was shaky at best. So, you know, it that sort of thing. So I went in the offseason and went with those guys down to Driveline and picking guys like Randy Wolf and Verlander and guys like that last year, picking their minds, you know, learned what I had to do. And it's hard to make an adjustment in the middle of a season on a pitch like that, because you've got all these you're predisposed to, like, you know, you got this old grip, and it's in your mind, and this is how you're going to release it. So it's hard. It's truly not a feel pitch, but it's feel for getting how you're supposed to release it, and how you're supposed to get it off your finger. So, you know, like, I didn't pick up a baseball at the end of the year. You know, December 1st rolls around.
Okay.
Had an idea of what I wanted to do, and we drilled the heck out of it, and worked it, and, you know, it's becoming a real weapon for me now, and I got a lot of confidence in it.
Yeah,
the second question, and with Ver, I mean, yeah, he's taken me under his wing. He's a great guy, you know.
It's a hairy wing.
he bought me you know, when I got after on our first road trip in Chicago, he bought me a few suits, and it was I mean, it was special. It's kind of a rite of passage.
That's awesome. That is
but real. he takes care of me. I'm probably in his ear too much. I probably annoy him.
Matt, kind of you've talked a bit about Oregon State. So did you talk to Michael at all when he was in the World Series, Conforto?
Yeah, he's a buddy. You know, he was really special to watch what he was doing there.
For sure.
Yeah, I was happy for him, man. It couldn't have gone any better for him. You know, obviously he could have came out on top, but I was really happy for him.
Great. Matt, I wanted to ask you a quick question too. When we were talking about your slider, we're just gonna have a couple more. We'll let you go. I know you got stuff to do, but you were talking about your slider and your curveball, and also you were talking about the importance of playing for that front of the jersey. While definitely agreeing with that, in my conversations with most baseball players, they always have personal goals before the season starts, things that they're shooting for that they want to achieve. Do you have those that you've set for yourself, and what would they be if you have them?
Just to have an insane focus on the present and not get too caught up in anything else. You know, if I just do my job and focus on, you know, one pitch at a time and and working at it that way, it's all going to work out.
So you don't have any goals for like innings pitched? I mean, I'm not saying you should. I'm just curious.
I have no control over that stuff. Sure. You know, yeah. All I can do is I get the ball every fifth day, and I'm going to go out there and compete. And if I every single pitch, I go out there and compete and literally just do what I can on that pitch. You know.
Yeah.
Over when it's all said and done, we'll be fine.
So Matt, because you're in camp with, you know, the major leaguers, you're getting a lot of, you know, you're getting a lot more time with the major league staff, and the pitching coach for the Tigers is Doobie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
So you guys are, you know, there's a lot of talk about you having five pitches now. Is that, you know, how are you guys interacting?
Doobs is awesome. I've got to, you know, learned a ton from him, and he's I'm just excited to, you know, continue to learn from him and grow as a pitcher. I've grown in these last few weeks.
Sure. In so your many last ways, start and he's was just fucking fire, man.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, and it's
sorry again for the swears.
It's okay. It's been solid, and I'm excited to learn from him and continue to learn from him over the course of the season. He's forgotten more baseball than I know.
Okay, let's David, you got one or two more for Matt, and we'll let him actually go do the important things as opposed to talk to idiots like you and me.
Sure. I mean, I guess we kind of touched. So you know, you're looking to be a five pitch, you know, pitcher, but you're also, you know, you got a 92 mile an hour fastball from the left side. Like, do you have any arsenal goals for the following year or the coming season? Like, is there a pitch that you really want to develop to be, you know, the number solid number three or solid number four?
I mean, I've got faith in all my pitches. You know, I look at them all equal. You know, you got to have that mentality of throwing any pitch in any count, and kind of going forth from that. And you know, that's just kind of what I got in my. That's just kind of the approach you got to take, and
for sure,
have confidence in all of them.
And your next start is,
Sunday, I think, something like that. Yeah,
Sunday. Who do you got?
Pittsburgh.
That's who you opened with against, right?
Yeah.
Cool. What's the load? Are you four innings now? What's the deal?
We'll see when we get to it. Not really sure right now.
David, do you have anything last second?
I was just going to wrap it up. I mean, thank you so much for coming on, man. And we'll be, you know, obviously following you super closely this year. And I wish you nothing but the best.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate it. And always, man. Hopefully I'll see you guys in Seattle.
Thanks to Matt Boyd for joining us as our first guest on Dome and Bedlam. We're back here. We're going to get back into the idea of position battles. We're going to start and go back to one of the ones that I think is the most interesting on the entire roster, which is the first base right-handed platoon.
Yeah.
You guys, there's two real candidates here. Gabby Sanchez isn't one of them. not trying to disparage Gabby Sanchez. I'm sure he's a nice man. Maybe he's a nice man. I would never say I'm sure about anything about somebody I don't know. But Dai Ho Lee and Jesus Montero are battling it out. And I'm not going to lie, you guys. I love Jesus Montero. I've been rooting for the guy for years. But I don't see how he wins this battle in a real way. I just don't. I just don't see how he's going to do it. I think this is Dai Ho Lee's job to lose. I think he's the one that's shown he has the actual pop. He looks surprisingly nimble around first base.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, like, I don't
know. Montero's still awkward there.
You know, like when Kirby is like floating above all the enemies and then all of a sudden, holy shit, he's diving straight down at a million miles an hour in Smash Brothers.
Yeah. Like, no, so true story. I made $1,000 betting on Kirby. Time, so.
I'm sorry. Wait, both of you just said things that I need repeated.
I've once made Okay, so this is a long story short. I started with $45 and I bet on Kirby for Super Smash Brothers simulations, so no controller input by people. And I kept betting on Kirby, and Kirby won, took me from $45 to $1,200.
Which southeastern nation were you in while you were doing this?
This was in Phuket.
What?
Also known as Northfield, Minnesota. But yeah, I made some serious cash. Kirby doesn't mess around.
I play Kirby all the time.
Because in a simulation, Kirby had both a escaping double up move plus the extra jump.
Uh-huh.
So impossible in a simulation to knock out.
Also, he brought the hammer with the down move. Like, if he was above you, he would destroy.
It was over.
Also, by the way, he just stole your power because he inhaled you and then shit you out.
Yeah, and now he's wearing the Luigi hat and you can't fucking do anything, but like there's some flowers being thrown with fire.
And that's Daiho Lee.
That is Daiho Lee.
He is Kirby.
Frankly, right now, Montero's looking a bit like Donkey Kong. Who
well.
Never works out.
He's doing that clap, you know, that upward clap all the time, but it never connects.
And okay, so I watched, because I recapped today, I watched the whole game, and I was lucky enough to see all four players who are theoretically, I'm including Stefan Romero in there.
Sure. Stefan Romero's a dark horse, honestly. He really is. He's way more of a candidate than
Montero.
Than Gabby Sanchez.
Right now. So I saw all four. Montero still looks really awkward at first. Daiho, it looks like he hasn't thrown a baseball in 5 years when he throws, but it works out somehow. But it just, Montero, you heard Blowers on the broadcast today talking about how he's working on going the opposite way. And so, sure, he fouled off a lot of balls down the first base line, but he didn't put anything in play. It was just, it's granted you lose him if you don't keep him, but it's the same with Daiho Lee.
Here's my question. Do you actually lose him? Because of the, it's a serious question. I think it's 50-50. Like, does somebody actually claim Jesus Montero at the end of spring training? Where can they put him? Really? He has such a limited amount of teams. It's AL only, right? No NL team is going to claim him.
Of course. He doesn't play on the field.
Daiho Lee doesn't play on the field?
No, Montero.
Montero.
Montero. I'm sorry. Very, very sorry.
If Montero gets DFA'd, does anybody claim him? What do you guys think?
You know, no, honestly, I was talking about Montero today, and he's 26. He's not a prospect anymore. What have you seen from the guy that makes you want to give him a place on your 25-man roster? Like, what does he do? I love the guy, and I respect the hell out of the work that he put into to, you know, get his life back together and get into shape. And we have people on staff that are really, really big fans of his. But I just don't see skills from him that translate to being a Major League Baseball player.
Yeah.
Like,
as a prospect, he had one tool, and it was an incredible bat, and he hasn't shown it. So
did he have an incredible at bat, or did he have a good bat at a very young age that was projected to be better? And then
or was he a blown-up Yankees prospect?
Yeah.
Well, and that's the other thing. He wore stripes.
The guy's comp was Miguel Cabrera.
And Thomas. That was it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean,
those are the names that were used by scouts.
It's true, but it's just not even remote.
Nah.
Well, and I wish that I had had more guts to say it at the time when we traded him, and it'll sound, you know, just apocryphal that, like, you know, I'm just going back and saying it, but when we first traded Michael Pineda for him, he had all this prospect hype, and I just watched the swing, and it never looked like a great Major League swing that could generate power to all fields, that was going to provide a plus hit tool. Like, you look at Miguel Cabrera and Frank Thomas and these guys he's compared to, and you see just it. That was never Jesus Montero with his swing.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that he had. That's the one thing. The bat has to be elite for him to be a baseball player.
And Montero's never, I mean, there's a certain whip that you see in the bat of a pure power hitter that I've just never seen out of Montero's swing, and I've just always wanted to come out. But granted, he'll connect with one, and you know, he'll go 420 or 430 with it. But it just – the you expect a power tool out of his prospect rating, and it's just – it hasn't shown, and he looks so just haphazard at first base, and he's never going to be a catcher at this point.
Oh, no. I mean, he's not even a first baseman.
That's done.
It's just –
So it comes back.
He was such a. I mean, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, right? When he threw out Mike Trout.
Yes.
He was such a bad catcher. Yep. Like, so bad. Yeah.
Yep. Kind of no hitter. Can't ever take it away from him.
He did.
I remember.
He's been present for all three Mariner no hitters, right? No. He was on the team still with Felix.
Well, he wasn't around. I mean, he was technically alive when Randy Johnson and Chris. Boz,
okay, I mean, like, all
he
the,
may
all
actually the no. Wait, wait, wait. He's 26. Yes, he's been alive for all of them. Bosio
was 93 for Bosio.
Yeah, Randy
right?
was 90. Yeah. 91.
90 whiny. Good year. Good year. Good vintage.
My favorite wine. But yeah, no. This all circles back to Dai Ho Lee, and I don't think that we're. Anybody's expecting greatness from Dai Ho Lee, and we're going to have something on him from Andrew later in the week on the site.
Yeah.
But the question is he the best right-handed first baseman on the roster? And I think at this point, it kind of looks like he is.
Yeah.
I agree.
And if you saw the home run he hit in spring training, holy shit, when he squares up a ball, it's going to go very
it's going
far.
A ways.
And you know, and it's he's a very easy player as a fan to get behind. I mean, for the average guy, like here's a guy who very clearly you could outrun on a 5K. And
in a 100 meter.
Well, yeah. And he's
in a sumo suit.
Yes. Wait, who's in the He's wearing a sumo
Scott's
suit?
In the sumo
that would explain
suit.
So much.
No, I am wearing the sumo suit.
Okay. No, I mean, this guy has legit major league power. And honestly, did you guys see him patrolling first base the other day? I mean, he's not terrible.
He's better than I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. He's way better than it's kind of the Prince Fielder quandary where it's like, hey, you're not good, but oh my God, I expected just you to literally catch fire trying to play defense on first base, and you did not. So good job.
So let me pose a question to you guys.
Yeah.
Because I think it's interesting. If Lee is good, he is maybe gone in a year, right?
Huh?
It's a 1 year deal. This is it. What do you think if we're talking about wins above replacement? What's the difference between Jesus Montero as a right-handed platoon to Adam Lind and Lee right now?
With if the you think idea about of keeping Montero going forward?
Yeah. Is it
– We talked last week about it being half a win.
If it's a half a win, do you want 4 years of control with Montero, which is – it's what it is. It's four – it might be five. I'm not sure because of the service time, but it's probably four. Do you want 4 years – Or one, and then maybe he comes back, but he's in his 30s.
You have the age factor with Dai Ho. He's 33.
Well, here's the other thing to factor is that you're only going to use Jesus theoretically more than through 2017 because you're thinking that Cano is going to move over to first in 2018 if you're really going to be optimal with the roster.
Sure. And Cruz is going to move to center, so obviously.
I thought Cruz was the projected second in the rotation.
Yeah, I that's a great question.
It's
also something that another factor that you got to if you want to look at it strictly from the numbers there, that's a really interesting argument. But also, what is the clubhouse going to say? I mean, if Dai Ho is obviously the best candidate there, and you keep Jesus, like, what does that say to the other guys in the clubhouse? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, and we go back to what we talked about a little bit last week, but like, I mean, you talk about the Mariners are in this weird position where they're in a win now window, but like they're not good enough to win now. So like, but the players have to believe that they're good enough to win now. So do you really
otherwise they can't win now?
When Yeah. Do you build for the future when your core pieces are at the end of their prime?
It's all about
like that's the most difficult decision the Mariners have to make right now. I don't know the answer.
Playing armchair GM, if I'm Jerry DePoto, the 4 years of club control for Jesus Montero as of March 9th, 2016, do not mean much to me because I have not seen anything from Jesus Montero.
I don't think that he'll clear waivers. Getting back to our earlier question, just because of old prospect shine, somebody will grab him.
Yeah.
He's 26,
I know.
Though.
I just don't think that he's anything, honestly. That's what, and it pains me to say.
How
is
he 26?
Well,
how is he 26?
I
know the math behind it, but the guy, like, when you think about the hyped prospect that he was at the age that he was when he was hyped, it's actually crazy that it's been that long.
Yep, it's death comes for us all, Scott.
The other day I was looking back at what did we say about the Jesus Montero trade? Well, Jeff Sullivan wrote about it, and it was in 2012.
I have to be honest. I will never forget where I was when that trade. Back then, I was reading USSM Mariner.
I didn't even own a TV.
USSM Mariner.
Yes, USSM Mariner.
Did you get a lot of 404s when you went there?
USS Mariner. And back then, I'll never forget. I was sitting because it was like January or December. I was sitting in my buddy's van in Northfield, Minnesota, and the outdoor temperature was something like minus 20 with wind chill, and it was like the sun had set in Minnesota, and I was cold as hell, sitting waiting for him to come from his house back into his car so we could go to this party. And that trade flashed across USSM, and I remember thinking, like, oh man, we're gonna rue getting rid of Pineda. And granted, I don't think we do rue getting rid of Pineda, but Montero just never panned out.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, it is what it. I think we should spin it forward and get excited about the idea of Daiho, because I think we're going to end up having
a year of him could be crazy
and fun. Just fun.
Yeah,
crazy fun. Yeah, and everybody's going to love the guy for everything that he does. We're all going to get really excited about him because he's just fun. He's just a big, you know, like, lurpy-looking guy who smacks the hell out of the baseball.
Who smiles weird in pictures. And,
he and Hisashi Aoki can take funny pictures together, and it'll be really enjoyable, and everybody will get behind that. But, yeah, I think at this point, Lee is definitely the prohibitive favorite for the first base platoon. Let's move on and finish up with some Twitter questions.
Really quick before we go there.
Okay.
Can we talk about Stefan Romero? Like, is there a legit shot at the 25 man here?
No.
I can't see it.
No.
Injury's got to happen.
I got into a discussion with this on Twitter. He's playing very well. He seems like a decent fellow. I would be perfectly happy being wrong, and my answer is no. No.
Okay.
He's not very good at baseball.
He looks physically very well.
I'm very happy for him, and I hope that he lives a long
time. Is he out of options?
I honestly, I'm going to install some sort of mechanism where I can, like, shock either of you, whoever asked me a question about options, on the fly, because who knows?
There's no way of knowing.
I barely understand options, and I followed the team extremely closely and wrote about them for many years.
Options are very confusing.
Barely understand.
Yes, don't ever ask me about options on the fly ever again. Stefan Romero has no options. He has to play baseball, or if he ever stops playing baseball, this bus will explode. Scott.
He'll become a police officer in the Inter Empire.
If Stefan Romero goes over 55 miles an hour, it's over.
No, he can't go under 55.
Under, yeah.
David, you were literally 3 when that movie came out.
Speed 2, Cruise Control.
Let's wrap it up with some Twitter questions, which we asked you guys for, and you guys were really, really nice enough to send over our way. The first one that I'm going to read was, again, we had one from last week from Kyle Rancourt. At Kyle Rancourt. Kyle, we really appreciate you sending this question. He sent in the question, who are your favorite Mariners? And he kind of phrased it in a way where we're not allowed to pick the usual. We're not allowed to pick Felix or Edgar Griffey, the unit. We're not allowed to do anything obvious. He kind of wants the B-sides of our favorite Mariners. Sure. Either you want to go first on that one?
Do we have to pick five or can we kind of?
I think we should pick five total.
Okay.
Five is a lot.
I mean, absolutely.
The Mariners are bad. So
he didn't keep it out, and absolutely Adrian Beltre's on the list.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's one of mine too, for sure.
I would totally agree. He's like trying to negotiate a contract offer through the
until he's 40.
Yeah. And it's like
he's gonna get 3,000 hits.
Yeah, I said it on Twitter. I said
I've been calling it forever. He's gonna hit it. He will. He's only 270 away.
When did he make his major league debut? 1996. Is he in his 20th year?
He was 19.
He was signed at 15, and the Dodgers got in trouble for it because it was a
PM.
Yep.
Yeah. He played. He showed up to spring training with a colonoscopy bag attached to him after a really bad appendectomy once.
He is. I will be honest. Forget the rest. Literally my favorite Seattle Mariner.
I love him. I love that guy, man.
I do too, man. I love that guy. And he is, I think amongst baseball, professional Major League Baseball players, I would make the argument he is the most beloved and respected player in the entire game right now, currently playing baseball. And I can't think of another one that came before. Maybe Cal Ripken would be one that would be before him, but he is an absolute icon. And the fact that we got him for 5 years, we should just really cherish that.
Crazy.
He's going to go into the Hall of Fame.
As a Ranger.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
That's all right.
That's fine. He should. It's funny.
He's not going to get a ring.
He's a Dodger, and neither is Mike Piazza, because Dodgers. We should just be really appreciative of the time that we had with Adrian Beltre and Jeff, who I reference often because Jeff was the founder of the site and an amazing dude and amazing writer. He termed him King Awesome in the very bleak days of the Mariners. And that was just a really good term for him because he really just was awesome at everything. And man, yeah, I'm with you guys. I love that guy. Anybody else?
I'll toss out Ryan Roland Smith. I mean, if you talk about players that we really, really enjoyed, there's nobody that I rooted harder for than the Hyphen. And, I mean, maybe a little bit of a bias there. He's been a friend of the site for a long time.
Yep.
We had a podcast with him and just such an amazing dude. But I always just loved watching the guy. Loved watching him pitch and always hope for the best and, you know, wish that he was still in the majors because he's such a good guy, but really, really loved him.
So I'm going to kind of cheat here because he also wasn't mentioned in Kyle Rancourt's tweet, but Alex Rodriguez.
Ooh, hot.
Oh, all agree. Take. All agree completely. Yeah. No, I will. Mean,
before I weigh in, you guys should state your case for A-Rod as one of your favorite Mariners.
He was fucking 97? Amazing. That's 97? My case. He was amazing.
97 Alex Rodriguez is probably the best Seattle Mariners baseball player ever.
I think you mean 96, but yes, 96. I agree.
Yes, 96. Sorry.
And he was 20 maybe that year. I think
what's crazy about A-Rod?
I'm not even going to check. A-Rod hit 356 that year and smacked 36 home runs as a 20-year-old above average defensive shortstop.
Yeah. What's crazy he was about Mike the Mariners Trout. Is that the Mariners had A-Rod, and he came up in that 95 season, right, and Joey Cora's crying and that whole scene with A-Rod. He was on the roster for a lot that year and just didn't play any games. And then he was on the roster a lot in 95. Wait, he was on the roster in 94, actually, I think, the strike year. Got a cup of coffee, and then he was on the roster a lot in 95, didn't play very much, and then it was really not until the third year that he was with the Mariners where he really started playing. They burned a bunch of service time with him, And really, if they'd managed that better, he should have been on the Mariners in 2001.
And we'd be talking different. Who was the 2001 Mariners shortstop?
Guillen.
Yeah, the bunter.
The bunt. That was 2000, though.
Yep. You're right.
Carlos Guillen is another candidate for a B-side favorite Mariner.
Yeah, except I love Carlos. He's not one of mine.
Who are yours?
You know, well, I'll give you one, and it's for one very specific reason, and it's way back, and my predecessor, John Shields, will appreciate that. It's Mark Witt.
Jack Anerhan?
It's Mark Witt. It's Mark
Hard Witt. Hitting Mark Witten.
Hard hitting Mark Witten, and for one reason and one reason alone, that I have never, ever seen a baseball hit as far at the old Metrodome as Mark Witten hit way back in like 97, whatever year it was that the Mariners set the home run record. I think it was 97. And he hit a ball halfway up the back of the old baggy, like off the back of the stadium. Just imagine a ball going off the back of the Kingdom. And that's what Mark Witten did. And it's just, it was at the height of the steroid era. And it was ludicrous, and the man had no other skills, and I did not care. Because he hit the ball almost through, like, if a ball was ever going to go through a stadium, it was that ball. Because
it was that ball.
Because the Metrodome was made out of inflated Teflon or something like that. And I loved
Mark Witten. Did not stick at all. No sticking.
Also, I loved, you know, I loved David Bell for no
particular reason. I like David Bell too.
He was our
only good third baseman between like a pretty dire time and Adrian Beltre.
We had Russ Davis, who was okay.
See, I didn't like Russ Davis, but I like David Bell. I don't know what the logic is that
David Bell played on better Mariners teams.
Yeah, there you go.
That was
winning
it.
With David Bell. That's it.
Yes, he had a home run off of Rob Nen once that was very clutch.
I was gonna say solely as a baseball player, but 2009 Russell Branyon.
Oh man.
Oh god, I love.
Yeah, not Branyon. Talking about any of the personal him. Stuff. Goodness.
Talk about an uppercut.
Well, think and we had.
Remember that homer that he hit in Yankee Stadium?
Yes.
Where he just.
Yes.
It was such a bomb. It probably only went about 390, but it was second deck, and it just was like a moonshot and a half.
Because he swung straight up.
Yep.
It was I am in a weird position to cut down this tree baseball swing.
Yes. Absolutely.
I will throw in my favorite retro-ish Mariner of all time, and that's Greg Brierley. God, did I love
Greg Brierley. Why do you love Greg Brierley? Explain this.
Okay. As a youth that loved baseball so very much but was not particularly good at it, there was a player on the Mariners who had glasses, as did I. And no. Yes. And he was very scrappy, and he was a man on the bench who often came in when the Mariners were – the game was very much in hand or out of hand. I just loved it. No, he just – I don't know. He had some speed on the bases. It's funny because the guy that came after him that played that role is Rich Amarill, and I hated him because it's all about expectations, right? Like we talk about like relative framing of a player, right? Like Rich Amarill was on a lot of good Mariner teams, but he was like bad, so I didn't like him. Whereas Greg Brierley was bad, but he was on a bunch of bad Mariners teams, so I was like, this guy's the hero, man. He's the best. Mostly it was just as a nerdy-ass kid just looking for a player to look up to and a guy that wore glasses that could play baseball. I was like, I could do that. No, I did not at all. I quit baseball when I was 12. I was very bad at it.
Scott.
Who was
Greg really Brierley should have.
Who was that? Who was that pitcher for the M's? I think he was Australian. Who had
Ryan Rollinsmith. We already talked about him.
Okay, never mind then. It wasn't the Australian. Who had the sweat gland issue where he had to change jerseys? Was it
Clint Najat?
Clint.
Yeah.
That guy was a hero just for...
He may have been Australian, actually, now that I think about it.
I think he was.
Yeah.
Wait, are we going to talk about Chris Snelling now?
Very deep into the USS MMM Mariner lore now.
Yeah, that's a favorite years past.
You guys, let's wrap it up with some hot takes because we're getting long. Let's close it out.
I was going to say, as long as we're here, we might as well mention that Richie Sexson was a hell of a Mariner.
His first 2 years.
Yeah.
First 2 years.
And then he washed out after the
third. And then he was a hell of a Mariner his last 2 years.
Yeah.
No, he was just a Mariner his last 2 years.
Yeah, a hell of a Mariner.
He embodied the Mariners.
Yes, he is the logo of the site for a reason.
It just it represents it all.
Yep, it really does. Just a lot of grown man peanuts. Just a lot of Charlie Brown as a grown man, just reflecting.
The most earnest pumpkin patch.
You guys, what are you excited about for this week with spring training? Like, what player are you going to keep an eye on as we close to end this, to watch for next week as we close this episode?
I'm not going to call out of this, but... I'll go first.
Yeah, you go, Scott.
I'll cop out on this. I'm not looking at any specific players. I'm just hoping that nobody else gets hurt. Mm-hmm. Really, that's the only thing that I'm looking for this week. Yeah. I'm just hoping for health. I'm hoping for normal development and cycles. And you know, the Mariners cannot afford to lose any other members of the bullpen. So I'm hoping that that'll stays good and narrow. I would like to see more from James Paxton. I think I heard, you know, a couple mixed things about his start, and I saw some of it, but, you know, I didn't see the full thing. And I'd like to see, you know, some people said bad luck on the start that he had this week, and I'd like to see a little bit more. The velocity was concerning. I read that he was sitting at 91-92. And that is not good. And right. So I'm hoping that that's...
They also classified a lot of them as cutters. So you wonder if he's just working on his cutter.
Yeah, it's spring training, right?
Yeah.
You really have no idea. But at some point, we're going to have to see what he actually has. Maybe it's not the second. Maybe it's the third. But I'm keeping a close eye on that.
Show me 95, please.
If Paxton is still throwing 91, 92...
Yep.
And he's not putting up results. Fair or not fair, he's going to lose that job.
That's what I think. Yeah, totally. Yeah, we've got people on staff that think he should.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting.
It's a byproduct of having a rotation with depth, which praise Jerry for that.
Seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. No, yeah.
James Paxton shouldn't come into camp with a job. It's a
great problem to have.
Yep.
But, you know, Paxton has got to show more because he's got to prove more. So,
David, you got anything you're looking at?
Yeah, so I think mine's pretty simple. It's just I want to see Leonis Martin more at the plate, especially because I think we're kind of expecting him to take on more at-bats against his worse side than before.
Against left-handed pitchers, you mean?
Exactly, yeah. So I just want to see him get some work at the plate. We know, thanks to Eric, which we kind of teased last week, the defense is stupid good. Mm-hmm. And I just want to see him get work at the plate. And, I mean, our very first episode, I called for potentially a 4-win season out of him, which is a huge long shot.
Yeah, that was dumb, but, David.
Yeah, I mean, it was dumb, but I'm known to do it. Mm-hmm.
It's your brand.
Yeah, it's my brand. But I just want to see him get some at-bats. And I think, man, if he can show that random and weird Ketel Marte bump in plate discipline, that Leonis Martin is a real player.
Yeah.
Like, if he can start taking walks, that dude is legit on the base paths, a plus-plus defender in center field, and if he can hit a couple the other way, we're doing all right.
Yep, I totally agree. And
what about you?
Yeah, you know, for me, I'm close to what Scott's looking at. I'm looking at the arms right now. I want to see relief pitchers step up. I feel like for most of spring training, we kind of make like that old hand wanking motion and just say none of this really matters. And for the most part, that's actually true. But I think that's not necessarily true on the fringes. And I think there's nothing that gets fringier than the last two spots on the bullpen, like what we talked about to open the episode. So I want to see stuff from guys like Aro. I want to see it from Zich. I want to see it from Peralta. Peralta?
Yep.
Yes, got there.
Yep.
I want to see it from those guys. I want to see them step up and not necessarily get results, but I want to be able to look at the pitch effects and be like, yep, they're locating. Yeah, their stuff is live. And I want to see them be healthy, and that's what I'm really looking for. I want to see a seven man bullpen that breaks camp, that I can squint and believe in before they fail, as opposed to one where I'm just like, oh God, and I'm just like praying that we get lucky with BABIP for the first month or two before people get healthy. So that's my big thing. I think that could be the first month or two of the season could really swing on the bullpen. So that's
for
my
sure.
So
that's what we've talked about before, right?
Yeah,
volatility.
Yep, absolutely.
Next couple months, we'll figure it out.
Yep, absolutely. You guys, thank you so much for doing this. Again, I'm very, very thankful to Matt Boyd for joining us as our first guest.
Big time.
Yep, absolutely. And thank you, listener, for listening to us all the way to the end. We will be back hopefully next week. Hopefully Scott will be in Washington State. Hopefully
it's
raining so hard. And we'll be back for the fourth episode of Dome and Bedlam. Thank you, you guys.
Thank you.